session number 10049, reel 3.
Group Captain Gillam, reel 3.
And went into attack. And then things move so fast that one has nothing, no time to think or to be afraid. One then had to disengage as best one could. Although the Battle of Britain was a fairly hectic battle. There were two periods in my tours which were much harder. One was with 615 Squadron on the Channel Stop, where the casualty rate was even higher than the Battle of Britain. And the other was when I was commanding 146 Wing, and we were softening up the coast of France and the radar stations before the invasion.
We'll come on to that in a minute, but coming back to the Battle of Britain, can you tell me whether or not you expected to survive it?
Oh, yes. I never had any doubt throughout the war that I was going to survive. And I looked upon that as a sort of base of which to operate from and survive and be professional about it. if one once doubted that one was not going to survive, the way downhill was pretty quick.
Did the pilots have superstitions, either during the Battle of Britain or at other times?
No, I don't think so. They often had lucky charms, but I wouldn't say they had superstitions.
Now, you were saying about the Channel Stop. Was that your next duty?
It was the next hectic period of operations. After I was posted from 616 Squadron to 312, we went up to Speke, where I shot down an 88.
Can you describe that incident?
Yes, it was, I think it was reputed to be the fastest confirmed kill of the war. As at Speke Aerodrome, and I was standing by in a section, and we got warning that there was an 88 on the loose and coming our way, and I was scrambled, and the cloud was fairly low, about 1,000 feet, and as I was scrambled with my number two, I was just getting my wheels up crossing the aerodrome boundary, then I met the 88 coming in on its bombing run, and I did a climbing turn and got under it and gave it about a 5-second burst, and it came down. It was obviously hit, and it crashed on the mud flats opposite Speak. I continued my turn and landed, jumped in a car, went round and greeted the pilot as he was getting out of the aircraft.
What was his reaction?
He didn't expect us to be there. He'd come all the way from France in cloud, and he'd broken cloud and to do his bombing run, and met me head on. One of my disadvantages was that my wheels weren't up, so my speed was relatively low, and he started to outdistance me, but as they came up my climbing turn and my initial burst convinced him that he had to get to the cloud very quickly, and I actually followed him into the cloud and shot him down in the cloud at about 1,000 feet.
I think with this squadron you were with Czechoslovak men.
Yes, that's right.
What were they like as compared with British pilots?
They were very much more experienced, not on modern types, but they were all had more hours. And they were very dedicated and intelligent. And keen. I subsequently, later in the war, had a Polish squadron. And the Poles were very dashing and very brave, but they weren't as intelligent as the Czechs. But the Czechs were very good.
Was the attitude of the Poles and Czechoslovaks towards the Germans any different?
I think the Poles hated the Germans more than the Czechs, which says a lot. I don't think any Pole would have spared the life of any German under any condition during the war, whereas the Czech might, under certain circumstances, not kill a German, but a Pole would almost certainly kill a German, even if he was defenceless. They were absolutely pathologically, almost, hatred of the Germans.
And the Poles didn't like the Czechs either, didn't they? Did they?
Well, they tolerated them, but I wouldn't say there was any particular love lost between them.
I get the impression that the Czechoslovaks were rather more like the British than the Poles were.
Yes, yes. The Poles were more Slav-like, and the Czechs were more intelligent.
Now, can we go on to the Channel stop, and can you tell me in as much detail as you can about that and why it was so lethal?
Yes, we were at the time a 615 squadron stationed in Anglesey, and the squadron had been there quite a time when I arrived. And Churchill was our honorary air commodore. One of the pilots, unbeknownst to me, wrote to Churchill and said it was time that 615 had some action. And the next thing we knew, that Lee Mallory, who was CNC Fighter Command.
Sorry, who was that?
Lee Mallory. C Fighter Command came storming down and said that he was not in a position of being told by Winston Churchill where to place his squadrons, and said that we were to go to the Channel stop with hurricanes, which we'd got.
What exactly did it mean, the Channel stop?
Well, it operated from Manston and consisted of a fighter squadron, and it operated with two group, with Blevins, and was charged with stopping all traffic going up and down the channel, which was pretty frequently. The Germans were using it for taking troops down, supplies, etc., in small boats, hugging the French side. And they were running these convoys down fairly, almost daily. Well, we went down there and got stuck in. And the flak was terrific because they had anti-flak ships in the convoys. And it was very expensive, and normally up to then about two squadrons had done a tour, and they'd both been decimated in a couple of weeks. Well, we lasted 4 weeks, just about a month. And
which month was that?
I think it was September, October. Because I was shot down about the end of October, November. But we had quite a few replacement pilots. But we started with about 25 pilots, and we had probably 10 replacements. And we flew away with about 4 or 5 pilots. Some strikes were more expensive than others. One, I lost 7 out of 8 on one strike by a flak. And it was pretty hectic.
Had the quality of your pilots changed by then?
They were better then. Better, they'd got more hours.
And the planes you were flying?
Our Hurricanes. And 8-gun Hurricanes, and we had a few with cannons and bombs. And if it was a big convoy, then 2 group used to operate with Blevins against them as well. But it was too expensive for the 2 group in general to operate. But it was trouble was that one had to go in at sea level, and then one lifted up when one saw the convoy and dived straight in and hoped to sink the boats and then out again. And the trouble is that they formed a cone of fire over the top of the central ship, which you had to fly through. And quite a few didn't get through.
Was there any way you could deal with that, or was it just a question of luck?
Well, we luck to a degree, but I did develop a tactic which was very successful towards the end. And that was that we flew in 2 fingers of 4, with myself on the left in central position, and we flew line abreast. And then when we saw the convoy, or the E-boats, we would lift like that, and I would cut my throttle, which would force these all forward so that they had to dive down like that and cross over. And by this way, we managed to disperse enough flak to get at it.
Like your fingers interlocking.
Yes. It was pretty hectic with 8 aircraft going at the same target and all at the same time.
A dangerous manoeuvre.
Yes. But we didn't have any collisions, but mighty near ones. But E-boats in particular were a speciality of ours. And there were 4 or 6 of them in a convoy quite often.
When you came back from a sortie like that, would you have a group discussion about tactics?
Yes, we did, and we were flying. We flew 1 in the morning and 1 in the afternoon as a routine, and then any more that any radar had picked up, we flew special sorties. But by and large, we were firing our guns every day. So.
And how difficult were these ships to sink?
E-boats, if you hit them, burned up very nicely. The small coasters, they were a good burst at a small coaster generally disabled it enough to finish it off. I think the up to about 3,000 tons was about the maximum we could deal with. Beyond that, we tried to lob a bomb in it, which was not easy because the bombs tended to bounce. But up to 3,000 tons, we could just about disable them with gunfire.
What size of bombs would you be able to take?
500s. 2 500s. With 11-second fuses. Trouble was that you could only have a couple of sections in before they started blowing up. So you launch those in and hope to hit them.
You must have been glad to get rid of the bombs.
Yes, they slowed up the aircraft considerably.
Can you tell me about your successes on the Channel Staff?
Well, they were pretty terrific because it even got up to Winston Churchill, and he sent us a cable from Washington, where he was, congratulating us on our efforts. And we virtually were... We stopped the sort of daily traffic dead in its tracks. But we were pulled out before the Scharnhorst and Eisenhower ran through. But the ordinary traffic never got going again after we'd got it. At the end of the tour, I was shot down by Flak and managed to bail out from about 1,000 feet and got in the water. And my number two is Dutch Hugo, circled round.
Sorry, who was that?
My number two was Wing Commander Hugo, who was a very fine pilot who stayed with me and directed the air sea rescue to me. We were so close into the French coast that we're in heavy machine gun range, and when an MTB came alongside, we got plastered from the shore. But it was very cold. It was in December, and one's rate of survival in the channel in September was pretty low. In fact, it was, I think you reckoned about an hour was the time when you died of coldness. But this to a degree is a mental problem, in that some pilots seem to survive much longer. The Poles in particular, when they were shot down, didn't survive long, which is surprising. But British pilots tended to survive much better, especially if they hadn't too much fat on them.
How is it that you came to be shot down?
Oh, I just got an anti-aircraft shell up the backside, and it wounded me in the foot and the hand and knocked the engine out. Well, stopped the engine. So I'd only time enough to pull up and then get out quickly, because to land the aircraft on the water was a very bad bet indeed, because they sank them almost immediately.
But did you see the aircraft that shot you?
No, it was a ground fire from the shore.
Could we go on next to the Dieppe raid in 1942?
By this time, I was at Duxford forming the first Typhoon Wing. We had terrific trouble with these aircraft, both engine trouble and losing their tail. In fact, losing a tail was so bad that we lost five or six pilots who were flying along, and suddenly their tail would come off. And we finally found out what was wrong. There was a mass balance weight on the elevators in the tail. And these were breaking off, which meant the aircraft went into an uncontrolled dive. And we just about got this right when we did our first operation down at Dieppe. Against a lot of resistance from fighter command, because they didn't want the Typhoon, which was a new fighter, being captured. We weren't allowed over the land, but we operated in the channel. And with reasonable success, the only trouble was that we got shot at by our own fighters as well as by the Navy, and we lost a couple of pilots to our own side. They hadn't seen Typhoons before and confused us with 190s. But we operated quite successfully at Dieppe and had the odd combat or two.
With what?
I think it was 190s. FW-190s.
Did you actually operate over Dieppe itself?
Oh, yes, yes.
At what time of the day?
Well, we were called... we operated from south of the river. We flew one sortie in the morning before lunch, then flew another sortie in the afternoon. So we had two goes at it. And the one in the morning, I think, was a combat one. One in the afternoon, we didn't see anything, but provided cover for the retreat from Dieppe.
How did the Typhoon compare with the Spitfire from your personal point of view?
Well, it's a much heavier aircraft, and it was faster on the level than the Spitfire, and it was a very much better gun platform, in that you could almost write your name with the guns, because the wings didn't flex and you could shoot pretty straight, and it took a lot of punishment. I liked it. I liked the aircraft very much, but it was not everybody's cup of tea. It was slightly difficult to fly, in that you'd got so much power that you had to start with a lot of rudder on to keep it straight when you put the power on, because of the big four-bladed propellers churned you away. And apart from that, it was very good.
What about landing it?
Well, landing it was, you were landing a bit faster, and you were landing a much heavier airplane. But apart from that, it was all right. You needed just a bit more space. But it was all right. Providing the engine kept going and the tail stayed on, which was, to start with, quite a problem.
And you could land on rougher airfields?
Yes. You had a wide undercarriage, and it would land on rougher air. But on the other hand, if the aerodrome were rough, they were also often soft, in which case one tended to dig in and go on one's nose.
I think that you had a raid over Paris in December 1943, which was interesting.
Yes, that was certainly the most dramatic raid of my thing. We went to see if we could catch the German fighters leaving the aerodrome during a bombing raid. And we went at ground level in fairly misty conditions. And we crossed France. And when we reckoned we'd got to somewhere about where we wanted to go, there was no sign of an aerodrome, so I turned north and came across an aerodrome, and we shot at various aircraft that were taxiing, etc., and then kept north for a short time, and we almost ran into the Eiffel Tower, which top was in the clouds, and we suddenly saw the bottom of the Eiffel Tower and hastily turned away and started back. I'd been hit during the attack on the aerodrome, but I didn't know at that time that my wireless was out of order with a fairly big shell having hit it. And as we went towards the coast, we were very short of fuel. We were tracked by 6 190s, and they caught us up because we were having to throttle back to conserve fuel. And we were flying in two sections of four, and I waited till they came within shooting distance, then I called brake, and the standard drill was for both sections of four to turn inwards like that and take on the attacking fighters. I called brake and I turned. When I got round, I suddenly saw the remaining seven aircraft continuing straight on. They'd obviously not got my message. I then had to look after myself, and I had 6 190s trying to shoot me down, and I turned and twisted, and the trouble was I couldn't wait very long because I was very short of fuel and still had 150 miles to go. Anyway, next time round, after taking a shot at one of them, I ducked down into a little valley between two woods and scooted up this valley. And when the valley came to an end, I found a wood, fairly tall trees, and I flew beside this at treetop level. And then I looked round again and I'd lost them. And I then set course for home and managed to get clear of the coastal defences and land in Tangmere with not enough fuel to taxi in. I'd been in the air about